When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Friday, April 26th. Just one tour level event on the calendar this week. Thankfully, it features just about all of the top players in the world. In fact, Jannik Sinner, he's playing this week. Carlos Alcaraz, he's playing this week. Iga Swiatek, she's playing this week. Aryna Sabalenka, she's playing this week. Hell, even Rafael Nadal is playing, and in fact, he's already won a match as the 1,000 level action in Madrid has already begun. In fact, we've already seen every seed in the women's singles draw compete, 10 of them knocked out in their first matches in round two of the event. That and so much more is what I plan to cover here on today's podcast. I want to preview both the Madrid men's and women's singles draws for all of you tennis fans. Again, that action already underway. A couple of notable seeds already eliminated from the women's singles draw. Players like 6th-seeded Jung Chin Wen, like 25th-seeded Marta Kostyuk, 26th-seeded Katie Bolter has been playing top 20 ball through these first 4 months of the season. That she got knocked out in her first match feels notable. And then, again, a bunch of other fun results as well. Fernandez, Samsonova earning impressive victories, some round one matches I want to catch all of you listeners up on in case you may have missed it. Again, we're a little bit further along, a day, in fact, ahead on the women's side than we are on the men's side. Thus, I want to spend a little bit longer discussing that women's singles draw, where things currently stand, what they look like as well as we hit round three and move forward through the rest of this event. But of course, even though they're a day behind, still plenty of meat on the bone in discussing the men's singles draw. You look again, Rafael Nadal earned a victory. That certainly feels notable given some of the serious downs he's experienced health-wise here in 2024. Of course, I know that was an event that every tennis fan at least somewhat superficially perhaps paid attention to, but plenty of other good ones on the men's side as well so far. Hubie Hurkacz, straight sets over Jack Draper, guys like Baez, Fritz, Tommy Paul, Andre Rublev, all earning much needed victories as we head into the heart of this clay court swing. Again, there are also some really fun round one matchups that may not have featured seeds, but certainly featured players that could play significant roles in this clay court portion of the season moving forward. Guys like a Thiago Chabot-Vild, a Flavio Caboli, and others. Players who looked impressive enough for me to feel the need to discuss with all of you listeners today. Again, on this show, I want to recap the early results we've seen from Madrid, set the scene as well, take a quick look at both the women's and men's singles draw. This is going to be a shorter podcast for all of you listeners, but I'm not just guaranteeing, I am guaranteeing. Let me say that again. Like Rasheed Wallace of the Detroit Pistons, we're dropping down a guaranteed. We will have podcasts today, tomorrow, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday here on this feed for all of you listeners as we get back on track with our recording schedule. And again, get you up to date on the most recent information being offered to us by the tennis world. I'm well aware we've been slacking from a recording schedule side on this show in particular. I promise it's not from a lack of want. I would record this podcast every day. I just don't want to be disingenuous with you listeners. If I'm not watching the tennis, all this podcast would turn into is me reading off of a list of results. And while some of you could perhaps accurately accuse me of doing that already, I at least feel as though I have additional insight to offer than just reading a score off of a score sheet. Typically, when we record these podcasts, haven't felt that way over these past couple of days, or dare I say past couple of weeks here in the college tennis season. We've just been preoccupied. Again, in the best sort of way, getting to cover what I think is pound for pound the most exciting, enthusiastic, exhilarating level of the sport we have. But I'm well aware, because of our coverage of all things college tennis, we have somewhat neglected our pro tennis coverage responsibilities. That ends today. I'll make up for it, I promise, moving forward, not just with my effort here over these next 6 days, but our effort moving forward through the rest of 2024 as well. I got to get back to our roots here. Lock in on these mini break podcast episodes for all of you listeners. At least get them recorded again, so you all know what's going on in the tennis world. I've had to adjust my tennis viewing schedule after the destruction, or should I say, It wasn't destroyed. Our garage bike at CRHQ, it just got worn down. It officially broke, and thus I've had to change my gym routine, which forced me to change my tennis watching routines, which, again, have changed all of my typical routines, which, by the way, are already altered because we've been on the road so frequently here in 2024. Anyways, I'm not going to justify the lack of episodes any further. I'm just going to say that we will make up for it moving forward. We will have more podcasts here on this feed, and we will get back to our typical recording schedule moving forward. That way, again, you listeners can remain the most well-informed, best-educated fans in the business. Of course, a thank you to all of you listeners here at the start for your continued patience and for continuing to turn to us for the most relevant information emerging each and every day in the tennis world. We sincerely appreciate that fact. Again, I'm well aware we've been taking that fact for granted of late. That ends today. Recording schedule going to get back on track moving forward here in 2024. A thank you to all of you listeners who have stuck with us. A thank you, of course, to the support we get from our friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products in the tennis world. With that said, let's look at Madrid. And again, this is going to be a shorter edition of the podcast. I want to lock in on even more results we've seen unfold over these next 24 hours so that tomorrow's podcast I can get juicy into the nitty-gritty details of who has particularly impressed me the most thus far. Let's start on the women's side of things because, again, we've completed round number two now. Every seed in the women's singles draw has played. We saw 10 of them eliminated on days 2 and 3 or 3 and 4, whatever the numbers were, of this Madrid event. Most notable upsets, in my opinion, starts off with 6-seeded Jung Chin Wen, who I watched the first 30 minutes of that match. It was 2-all, 3-all between her and Putintseva. It felt like Putintseva, yeah, was getting away with some short angles, getting away with some drop shots, but that it also felt like we were just waiting for Chin Wen to find her rhythm, that you could tell her footwork was still in the defrosting stage of the match, and that as she sort of became accustomed to the rhythm, the match pace, the flow of the Putintseva, dare I say, rhythm, that she was going to find her footing, that her forehand was clearly the biggest weapon on the court. Again, watching her open up plus one angles for herself with just how impressive she is producing pace and angle behind her serve, it just felt like she was going to have the opportunity to dictate, that this match was going to be on her racket. And look, if you listen to the podcast with David Kane we did on Wednesday, you all know I still maintain high hopes for Chin Wen, not just moving forward more broadly, but here immediately in 2024. I think the runway is there for her to not only take a top 8 spot, but consolidate that position at the top of the game moving forward. She was forced to withdraw. 7-5, 2-love, she falls to Yulia Putintseva. And look, Putintseva's had a pretty good year. After falling outside the top 50, back in the mix now, obviously physically remains a monster and just can drop shot you to death. Just epitomizes the phrase death by a thousand paper cuts and does such a good job of making opponents uncomfortable. But again, another disappointing post-Australian Open run for Chin Wen, who just, you know, again, last year was injured during the Sunshine Swing, never really got things going until immediately after the French Open when she won that clay court event, and then kind of from the after French Open mark, or after Wimbledon, to the start of end of the Australian Open, she went on that remarkable six-month run. Now it's been another 3 months of just like nothing to discuss. I mean, again, you look for Chin Wen since her run to the Australian Open final, which obviously is the sort of run you expect every young player, not you expect, but the sort of young run that can catapult so many young talents to the top of the game and have them never fall. Now, again, she's 8 in the world right now. Like, ranking-wise, she's still feeling pretty good. But what are the results since the Australian Open? Second match loss in Doha. Quarterfinal loss in Dubai to Iga. That's fine. First match loss to Yuan Yua, Indian Wells. Yeah, Yuan Yua was playing great, but she's got to do better than that. Straight set loss, second match for her in Miami. Three set loss, second match for her, round of 16 in Stuttgart. Now a first round loss here against Putintseva. So again, since that Australian Open final, Chin Wen now officially 4-6 overall since losing in the Australian Open final. Given she has been relatively healthy, again, played main draws, Indian Wells, Miami, Stuttgart, to win just four matches in this post-Australian Open stretch, that's a major dip. That's a major decline. That's a major disappointment. And again, injury aside, I know today, I'm not specifically saying because today you realize that how disappointing this post-Australian Open has run has been. No, that's been a take that's been festering in the back of my head. Probably one I would have shared more frequently had we just been recording more consistently, but that's notable for someone. Now, again, who are the losses to? She's lost a match to Iga and Kostyuk, who I think have been, and Azarenka, who arguably have been three of the top eight players here in 2024. But losses to Yuan Yua, to Putintseva as well, Leila Fernandez. Like, I thought she had jumped a tier above that. I thought perhaps this would be the year where we start to see the consistency week in, week out, whenever Chin Wen is healthy. And for the most part, again, she has been relatively healthy. The results have been anything but. So that was certainly, I thought, the first upset that jumped out to me. Obviously, she was the highest seeded upset as the number six seed. The rest, let's just go case by case here, rapid fire. Kruger, 3-3 over Alexandrova. You all know how big a believer I am in the young Americans. Her weapons can make anyone uncomfortable. For someone who plays as line drive centric as Alexandrova does, that's a bad matchup. Kruger continues to be on the rise. A really good win for the young American, who's now up to a new career high, number 66. How about Sarah Bialik? That's the other one. A name I should have freaking mentioned with DK. I blame myself for not doing so. The 18-year-old from the Czech Republic, she just has a game built for the clay courts. Yeah, the ground strokes are a little bit funky, but how well she finds the angles, how well she moves the ball around the court, the topspin she's able to play with as well. The 18-year-old from the Czech Republic up to number 121, new career high, as she earns an upset victory over 24th-seeded Kalinskaya, 1-4. By the way, how good will Kalinskaya be making the transition to a new surface here as a top 32 player for the first time? I think that is one of the most open and fascinating questions we have looking at this clay court stretch. And so, you know, can Kalinskaya consolidate her positioning? As of right now, the answer has been no. But that's just a note that, again, Sarah Bialik is a top 50 clay court player. And this was a reminder. And I blame myself for not realizing it earlier. Mira Andreeva, 4-6, 6-3, 6-3. She knocked out Linda Noskova in round two. She also got a really impressive 4-6, 6-1, 7-5 victory over Taylor Townsend in round one. It's just a reminder that, you know, as many fun young talents as there are right now in the women's game, 16-year-old Mira Andreeva has to be on the short list of the most talented and the most exciting prospects we have in women's tennis right now. Just has no business moving as well as she does. Has no business being as physical as she is, the backhand, like how developed it is as well. She's not just blitzing people with weapons. Like, it's just to be this advanced and this skilled at this young of an age, just remarkably impressive. Remarkably impressive from Mira Andreeva. And, you know, again, every so often, she just likes to sprinkle in a reminder. I mean, it's not even every so often. Keep in mind, like, how limited her play has been. You look for Mira Andreeva now, how limited her schedule has been, excuse me. She's 30-13 over her last 52 weeks. You take out the two 125K matches, she's 29-12. She's winning 70% of her tour-level matches as a 16-year-old. Turned 17, by the way, in 3 days. Happy early birthday to you, Mira Andreeva. I guess this week's run has been a gift to herself. I guess there's just times when you ask yourself, what are we doing here? I mean, as many fun prospects as there are in the women's game right now, and you look at the under 23 rankings, again, Swiatek 22, Goff 20, Chin Wen 21, Kostyuk 21, Noskova 19, Is Andreeva the... I mean, no, not more. Iga's already won, you know, again, four slams. Like, she is the premier prospect moving forward. Goff's got a slam as well, so she obviously has to be number two. Who's three on that list of rising prospects who get you most excited moving forward? Chin Wen's got a slam, a final. Obviously, that's significant. Kostyuk, Navarro have been as consistent as any other two players not named Iga or Rybakina, dare I say, here in the 2024 season. Noskova beats Iga at the Australian Open. Yet with it all, Andreeva's just kind of floating there, right? Just kind of hanging around like the most underrated, uber-talented, under-17-year-old in the top 50. Again, youngest player in the top 100, let alone the top 50. I don't want to say forgotten, because she hasn't been forgotten, but I should probably spend more time marveling at the prospect that is 16-year-old Mira Andreeva and just how good she might be moving forward. But, you know, again, other upsets here, rapid-fire style, just talking through them quick. Cerebaz Tormo, 3-5 over 16th-seeded Svitolina, continued struggle for Svitolina after I thought she was so good in her first 6 months on the job and returning, but good win for Cerebaz Tormo, hashtag she's back. Maria Carla, who spent a year at Georgia before turning pro. I mean, talk about a continued rise on these clay courts up to a new career high inside the top 100, is the former Georgia standout. In fact, the Argentinian up to a new career high, number 71 in the live rankings. Very impressive upset victory for her, 4-4 over Kudermetova. Jacqueline Christiane continues to return to health, the 25-year-old. 2-6-6 love 6-2 over Barbara Krejcikova, who probably is the single most fascinating wild card we have right now in the women's game. Just like, which Krejcikova shows up? Is it going to be the one who won the 2021 French Open title? The one who was a top eight player clearly for the majority of that season? The one who last year in flashes was a top eight player, maybe even a top five player just behind that Sabalenka? You know, again, when she was at her best, Iga, Sabalenka, Goff, Pegula, quartet at times. Like, this is last season, not this season, obviously, with the introduction of the consistent Tier 1 Rybakina. Which Krej are we going to get? It's a fascinating question. She gets knocked out by Christiane in her opening match as she continues to try to work her way back. Meyer Sharif, 2-5 over 25th seeded, and Stuttgart finalist Marta Kostyuk. That's Kostyuk's, like, first weird loss of the season. It's also a really good win for Meyer over someone who probably had very weak legs, given just all the three setters she played last week. You just have to wonder how much gas was left in the tank for Kostyuk. Yeah, disappointing loss, but a little bit of a schedule loss as well. It's not even a disappointing loss. This is a who cares loss. Marta Kostyuk did all of her work in the first 15 weeks of these first 16 weeks of the season, so she's allowed this one mulligan. Great win for Robin Montgomery once upon a time, an uber-talented prospect. Still an uber-talented prospect, but maybe not the hype she once had. She gets a 1-6-6-3-6-4 win over Katie Bolter, who, by the way, was just a reminder, like, oh yeah, when she's on her front foot, she's great. Not a bad mover, but a little bit more difficult when stretched into those outer thirds. Caroline Dalahide, massive win for her, 6-7, 6-2, 6-3 over Angelina Kalinina. Remember, every win for Dalahide until she has to defend those 1,000-level Guadalajara points at the end of the year. Pretty much free points to add to her resume. She just tries to, you know, right now you look for Caroline Dalahide. She's much higher. She's 54 in the rankings. I think she's one of those players, it's a rare moment where you say, hey, her, just given how dramatic that jump was for her to go from outside the top 100 for her full career to making a Guadalajara final, now all of a sudden you're in the top 50. If I'm Dalahide, my goal is to stay top 75 by the end of the year. Not stay top 50, stay top 75. Make the most of the opportunity to have this runway to play tour-level events and just try and stay in the ballgame moving forward. Nice little dual matches for her to do so. Exactly that. Again, wins over the win over Kalinina in three sets. Last upset here to mention. How about Sloane Stephens? She wins the title last week on the red clay. Now you look for her this week. Three-set win over Elisa Mertens, who is like the litmus test. Do you want to sniff around with the elite of the elite right now in women's tennis? You better damn well be able to get through Elisa Mertens. And again, for Sloane, who played a bunch of tennis last week, is coming off of a title week. Two wins for her to start her Madrid campaign. Sloane Stephens back up now to where? Number 35 in the live rankings. You know, again, she was a little higher to start last week, but Sloane Stephens seeded at the French Open, in my mind, makes a lot of sense because she's made runs there, obviously, in the past. But yeah, like, I just, again, I'm a big like, if this is the Sloan, we get a confident, locked in, moving really well Sloan. But the key thing is locked in, confident and locked in. The tennis has always been there for Sloan. Again, it's just a matter of where is she mentally at any given moment. Well, right now she's locked in. She's into the third round. That's extraordinarily impressive. By the way, your other, those were all of your upsets, your other notable results here quickly. Fernandez, big win for her, 5-3 over Anastasia Potapova, who is down to 41 in the rankings. 23-year-old needs to get things going. Speaking of which, Ludmila Samsonova gets her first win, maybe of the season. Not actually, but in my mind, certainly feels like it. 6-2-4, 6-7-5 over Naomi Osaka. If that's the level Naomi Osaka is going to bring on clay, she can be a top 50 player on the surface. You add that with, obviously, if she's at her fit, her most fit, at her most confident, we know she can be the best player in the world on hard courts. Grass courts very much up in the air. But I thought Osaka's moving so much better, still serving so well. I mean, Samsonova, that was just a weird match. A lot of drop shots, a lot of plus one errors. Wasn't the prettiest or cleanest tennis, but hey, Samsonova needed the win. She gets through. And then welcome back, Diana Yastremska. Love 6, 7-5, 6-4 over the always physical Emiliana Arango. That match looked exactly like you'd expect it to look. Nice to see Yastremska back in the winner's circle. By the way, other round ones notable. Andreeva knocks out Townsend in straights. Bailik, not only the win, the upset win, excuse me, over Kalinskaya. Good win over Anna Blinkova as well. I mentioned Emiliana Arango, her first round, 7-6 in the third. She knocked off an Amanda Anisimova, who, I'm telling you, if healthy, I just, like, I don't want her anywhere near my section. Because if healthy, she's going to make a round of 16 of the French Open. Like, she just, her weapons, how well she strikes the ball, the lack of fear, I feel like she plays with. It's main character energy. Or it's not main character energy, but there's a place for success for it always on the tour moving forward. So, again, that's a really good win for Arango as Anisimova is still looking to find that confidence. How about Maniero, the three-set win over Paula Badosa? She continues to look for form. Carla, 2-2 over Emma Raducanu, who had been playing particularly well. That was the first setback for Raducanu from a result perspective in a while. Then Shmidlova, 3-4 over Sofia Kenin. As I mentioned, when is Sofia Kenin going to get things going? Was that 2019 to 2021 run? Is that really never coming back? Because if it really is never coming back, again, we're going to have to just, like, we need to do a full-throated podcast on what went wrong. Like, why did this happen? What is Kenin's future? Like, it, one of them, again, Grand Slam champion. She made two of the three Grand Slam finals in 2020. And then it all just went away. Again, one of the most fascinating story arcs in of a career in recent memory. Again, that's who was knocked out. Those are all the notable results thus far. You look at my predictions in terms of what I see unfolding moving forward. You know, again, round three now officially set with Danielle Collins advancing in three sets over Olga Danilovic. Matchups are fun. You look at the Swiatek quarter of the draw. She's got Maria Sakkari as her fellow top eight seed. Swiatek going to take on Kirsteia next, whom she's 3-0 against. Then after that, potentially Vika match. Again, Vika's going to hit through that court. Like, Iga just moves so much more comfortably. And again, Vika's pace a little bit more flat. Clay has always been, I would say, her least successful of the three surfaces. But man, she's going to go down swinging. Like, again, she's not going to walk into that match with fear, which it feels like half the players, they walk into that Iga match thinking, all right, I'm already down 3-love. Not going to be the case for the former world number one. Of course, that's projecting. There are always times when Kirsteia can just strike gold and swing cleanly. That said, I'd expect Iga to get, I mean, I always expect Iga to get through. 44.4% favorite, 44.6, excuse me, according to the Tennis Abstract singles forecast to win the event. Look, she lost last week in Stuttgart. I'll say this for the fifth consecutive pod. My favorite version of Iga is the Iga who's responding to a loss, because that's typically when the 12 to 20 match win streaks start again. I'd expect her to get through this again. Easy first-round victory for her. But it's a fun section, and that's a really fun match between a Maria Sakkari, who's gone, what, finals Indian Wells, quarters Miami, semifinals Charleston, her last three big events. Now she's taking on a Sloane Stephens, who's won 6 in a row, going into that round three matchup again. And early, like, hey, you want to be a frisky tier two contender at the French Open? Not tier one. That tier one list is locked. It ain't changing. But boy, is tier two of contenders wide open on the women's side. And maybe I talked to Ben Rothenberg too much, but you can start to talk me into Sloan as, like, again, what's the difference between a player ranked 35 and 7 right now, the week that they're competing in? That really is the difference. Like, it just feels like those level, that parity is so clear. That is a fascinating match. By the way, 2023 French Open semifinalist Beatriz Haddad-Maia just floating in that section. She'll take on 19th seeded Emma Navarro, who I think all of us are curious how well will Navarro. I mean, she's already had some success on red clay, but these 1,000 level events, they're all new to her. It's still all free points, like for Emma Navarro, who's replacing 60Ks or 80Ks on her resume. Now, a lot of matches to replace, but she's the number 19 seed at this event, 1-0 against Haddad-Maia. And again, that's a serious, like, okay, second week level test at a French Open. You want to make it to the second week, you want to make a deep run there, you're going to have to beat at least one Beatriz Haddad-Maia probably to get to the round of 16. So an excellent litmus test for Navarro. Again, that's a really fun top quarter of the draw. Haddad-Maia taking on Navarro. Again, Swiatek, Kirsteia, Azarenka, Haddad-Maia, Navarro, Sakkari, 6 of 8 seeds still alive. Cerebes Tormo just knocked out one of the seeds in the section, as did Sloane Stephens. And by the way, again, Stephens is coming off of a title, so unseeded but playing like a seed. And then you just know Cerebes Tormo, definition of thorn in the side. So that's a really fun section of the draw. You move next to the Coco Gauff section of I'd expect Iga to get through. Oh, I love this Coco Gauff section of the draw. Her versus Yastremska. Contrast, power into the Gauff forehand. Yastremska kind of going to do her own thing regardless of what Gauff is doing, which, again, if you get lulled into the physicality of Coco Gauff, that's when you get in trouble, when you get playing to her patterns, when she gets to go backhand cross, backhand line, move forward behind that backhand, inside out forehand to open up the inside end to get forward to the net with her speed behind. Yastremska has the power to disrupt that. Yastremska has the power to play on her own terms, as is just about everyone in this section. I mean, this is a really good one. Gauff versus Yastremska. Keys versus Samsonova. By the way, how healthy is Madison Keys when she has been healthy? She's been one of the 10 best players in the world for 18 months now. It's just been a matter of health. Again, when healthy, the level has been there. It's just she hasn't been on tour that frequently. Taking on a Samsonova who, you know, again, on the right week, Samsonova is the best player in the world. On the wrong week, she has no business in the top 50. Which Samsonova do we get tomorrow? Your guess is as good as mine. If there's any opponent for Ostapenko to right the ship against, it's Maria Carla. But again, Ostapenko has been so up and down after maybe the best 9-month stretch of her career heading into like mid-February this year. And then Fernandez versus Jabeur. Fernandez has been the better player, no doubt about it, for the last 6 months. But again, it's always just a matter of how healthy is Ons. Like, we haven't seen her 100% healthy for more than 40 minutes of a match, it feels like, for the entirety of this 2024. So how healthy is Ons Jabeur? An open question. God, is that section fascinating. I'm going to take a big hitter. You know, this is the week Ostapenko rights the ship. Give me Ostapenko through to the semifinals to take on Iga, then Iga to right the ship there. I'll take Iga in the final. I'm taking Iga over Sabalenka in the final, just a spoiler alert for all of you, because I'm going to go out of order here now to the Sabalenka quarter. Her match was just weird today. Straight up weird. Her 3-set win over Magda Linette, and look, she got the let cord forehand on the break point, but she was up love 40 in that game. She was going to break, in my opinion, no matter what. Was knocking on the door of doing so. Or was it love 40? Was that a multiple break point they traded? Yeah, it was multiple break points, excuse me, trade game, and then she closed that love. The weight of her shot on this surface, if she's playing consistent, if she's mentally present, and obviously given everything that's gone off the court, that's a big ask for Aryna Sabalenka. But if she's mentally present, I mean, again, it was just, this was the first time I'd watched a full Sabalenka match for a while from start to finish. And it's just, like, again, was it erratic? Yes. But it was a reminder of why I fell in love with her game, because there are times when she just hits the tennis ball different from anyone I've ever seen in the women's game strike that ball. Even like, again, Serena levels of power where you're just like, oh, what? Like, and you're fluid? Again, I want to see her right the ship. I think it's better for the tennis world if she does right the ship. Sabalenka going to take on Robin Montgomery. Other players in this section, you've got Jacqueline Christiane now taking on Danielle Collins. Ooh, The prospect of a Sabalenka-Collins round of 16 matchup, all sorts of main character energy in that. Sign me up. By the way, just quietly, Jasmine Paolini continuing to protect seed. She's through to round three, a date with 21st-seeded Caroline Garcia. I like the Vondrousova-Andreeva matchup a lot. That's going to get real physical and again, how mentally disciplined can Andreeva be? That will be an excellent test of her moxie. Last but not least, the Rybakina quarter of the draw. Elena Rybakina, the number four overall seed. Is it weird that I'm like, again, this is the one that least entertains me. She's got Meyer Sharif up next. Bailik and Kruger, the players left in her immediate eighth of the draw. That's the term I was looking for on the top half to round out her corner. Kasatkina, Pavlyuchenkova, Dalahide, Putintseva. Given she just won the tournament in Stuttgart and she played multiple three sets to do so, talk about the draw opening up perfectly. That is a cupcake of a draw for even a 75% speed Elena Rybakina to get through to the semifinals. I think this week's going to deliver. I think this is going to be a great French Open proxy run. I think the best players are ready. You know, again, Madrid's kind of like, all right, time to start ramping things up if I want to feel confident like I'm playing my best come Roland Garros. I mean, I think Iga's winning the event. I always think Iga's going to win the event if she's entered into it, and I reserve the right to be surprised each and every time she does not. She's a 44.6% favorite to win it, according to Tennis Abstract. After that, Rybakina, 17%, Sabalenka, 11.6%. After that, there's a healthy dip. I see 3.3% Danielle Collins, and again, she's won 14 in a row now after her win today. Jabeur, 3.5%. Coco Gauff, 7.7%. But yeah, as we've discussed of late, Swiatek, Rybakina, Sabalenka, that's tier one. That's the double-digit club. Gauff, tier 1.5, just below that. She has earned that next benefit of that. And then after that, who's hot in any given week? Pick a name out of a hat. Again, David Kane joined me on Wednesday to kind of try and rank our players ranked 5 through 12 in the men's and women's games right now. Again, wide open, it feels like, those positions right now as we try to consolidate who is at the top of our sport at this moment. That said, that's a really fun WTA Madrid draw. And again, like, yes, we had 10 seeds eliminated in round two. All the big names are still alive. And I think we are going to have a blockbuster matchup or two unfold. What, last year in Madrid, we got the Sabalenka-Swiatek final, right? One of a couple. Yeah, they played Stuttgart last year. Swiatek won. Then Madrid, Sabalenka wins that final in three. Hopefully this lives up to that, because again, that was a really exciting stretch of clay court tennis, and certainly the names are there to produce that sort of excitement again on the women's side. That said, that's everything you need to know so far on the WTA side of things. We're going much faster through the men's side of things here, because again, we've only seen half of our seeds compete thus far. The upsets, fairly straightforward. Denis Shapovalov, biggest win of his return, biggest win of his season, 2-6 over Tomas Martin Echeverry. He's starting to look match fluid again. Like, the steps aren't just so out of sync. The plus one was always looking fine, but the return of serve and the first ball after the return, obviously we're on clay courts now, but he just has more time to get into his playbook, more time, and he's more comfortable. There's that extra half second for him to set his hands, to load on his hip and explode through the ball. I mean, Thiago Seibert-Wild, so that was the best win from Shapo. Thiago Seibert-Wild is my next name. Like, keep in mind, this guy, who'd he beat? Medvedev last year, I think, at the French Open? It was Medvedev, right? Not Tsitsipas. I believe it was Medvedev who just plus one forehand his way. Like, this guy just has bazookas of weapons. And again, the former junior U.S. Open champion is finally in shape. Like, he just moves well. He's lost 15 pounds from when he first walked onto the tour, and he's put on more muscle, and he's just match confident. And again, hits his spot so well. It reminds me of, like, the biggest JV version. Like, his serve and his plus one forehand are the JV version of what Stefano Tsitsipas does, the erratic version of it. But that same dictate behind it, that same aesthetically perfect technique, that same weight of shot always moving forward on the run forehand, very difficult to deal with, anticipates better than perhaps he is from a fluidity standpoint, but the movement isn't compromised. I mean, again, Seibert-Wild was just firing darts from the baseline, and he has that gear to him, particularly on this surface. Very impressive win, 4-4 over, obviously always a tough out on clay in Lorenzo Musetti. And then, speaking of shot makers, Daniel Altmaier, 2-3 over an Arthur Fee, who, yeah, made the quarterfinals in Barcelona. But talk about uninspiring. I really thought Fee was going to capital P pop here this year. He's yet to do so. So, again, a little bit of a disappointing loss for him. But certainly, again, only three upsets so far. A lot of tight matches, though, in terms of round two battles. And, you know, you look at some of our winners against seeds who were able to advance most notably. How about Hubie Hurkacz? Just another, I think his fifth straight or sixth. No, not fifth straight because he lost, obviously, in Monte Carlo. But he wins Esterol, loses round of 16 to Monte Carlo finalist Casper Ruud. Now a win over lefty Jack Draper, 1-5, a match where he did not face a single break point. He's won 7 of 8 to start this 2024 clay court season. He looks like a top 10 player in the world. That serve, he's just so confident behind it. But it's not just a plus one serve bot. Like, someone that size with that sort of weapon has no business moving as fluidly around the court as Hubie Hurkacz does. It just continues to consolidate my thought. He is a top 8 guy. Regardless of surface, he's just a top 8 guy right now. And obviously, we want to see it translate to the slams because that's where he's been least consistent. But that was a really freaking good win, as was Sebi Baez's 6-4, 6-7, 6-3 win over Luka von Asche. Baez has obviously been the South American clay court king. Needs it to get translating here over to European clay pretty quickly. And, you know, again, this is an opportunity of the calendar that he has to attack. If Sebastian Baez is ever going to make a top 12, top 10, dare I say tour finals push, it probably involves him going quarterfinals or further at every European major clay court event. Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Madrid, Rome, Roland Garros. I think that season will come 5 years from now, maybe 2029, when, oh no, he's 27 years old or whatever Baez's age will be then. And, you know, again, everything, you know, some people have aged out, et cetera, prime of his career, et cetera, et cetera. That was a really good win for Baez, though, to grind out that 3-set win over von Asche, get his European clay court season truly kickstarted. Your other big winners, how about a couple Americans? Taylor Fritz, 6-4 over the fast-rising young Italian Luciano Darderi, considering Fritz played in a final last week in Munich. Good to see him make a quick transition. No let-up from him in round one. And then guess who's healthy again? Tommy Paul, 6-7, 6-1, 6-4 over qualifier Lucas Klein. No one's going to accuse him of playing his best tennis, but for a first match back since that injury, great to see Tommy back healthy, moving pretty well, and then slowly gaining confidence as that match progressed. You know, your other seeded winner, Cirundolo, straight sets over Marizan, always dangerous. Andre Rublev finally gets a win, 1-4 over Facundo Bagnis. Zverev, Davidovich Fokina, winner over Jerry Shang. That match was sneaky fun. Holger Rune takes out the fast-rising young Argentinian Mariano Navone, 6-4 in the third win for Rune. And Alcaraz, by the way, got his tournament started 2-1 over Alexander Shevchenko. He looked every bit the part of our Carlos Alcaraz that we all, of course, have come to expect. That's everything, again, on the men's side thus far in terms of notable results or things we've seen unfold. Again, I know I spent a little bit less time analyzing that than I did the women's side. Tomorrow we'll do a reversal, and I'll kick things off with the men, maybe get into further depth, too, about the draw because, look, we're still halfway through round number two. I still haven't seen... I want to see all the top seeds compete. You know, again, yeah, it's a big week for Carlos. How healthy is he? A guy who, if you would have asked me 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, as he was really, truly making his first ascent, I would have bet the house that this guy would be the best clay court player in the world. If he was going to be number two in the world right now or number one in the world, I would have bet it was going to be on the back of an ascension on clay courts. That hasn't been the thing. Of course, he's still been Carlos Alcaraz on every surface, but the slam came at the U.S. Open. The other slam came at Wimbledon. All the challenger successes he rose up the rankings came on clay. I'm just waiting. There's going to be my favorite video of all time. Wimbledon, they're asking Rafa to recount some of his vintage clay court seasons, and Rafa starts going through, you know, 2012, didn't lose, 2013, didn't lose, you know, 2011, one loss, 2009, lost Soderling, like, 2008, didn't lose. You know, again, Alcaraz at some point, maybe accent aside, will have, I'm convinced, one of those runs where they're going to be talk to us about 2026 through 2029 clay courts. And maybe Sinner gets that good. Maybe Rune, they continue to push him. But it's going to be like, oh, 2026, one loss Rune, 2027, one loss Sinner, but French Open and Madrid titles, like... He's one, obviously, to watch. We went through who are the most important, who is this most important for last week with DK, or excuse me. Ugo Humbert, really good win over Van de Senschkop, a guy who's just quietly putting together a top eight season. He's 11 right now in the points race. We're a full 4 months in, and he's still top 12 in the points race. That speaks to just how consistent and how high the highs have been. Multiple titles for Ugo Humbert this week. Is this a Davidovich Fokina week? Typically, if he wins more than one match, he ends up in a semifinal or a final of an event. Now, again, he's only won one so far over Jerry Shung, but him versus Andre Rublev, that match is just going to combust. Like, there's going to be something crazy that happens in that one. So, we'll keep an eye on it. Again, Tommy Paul versus Cerundolo in, Fritz versus versus Baez in, Zverev versus Shapovalov coming up in. We get to see the Demon Hour and Nadal rematch tomorrow. Hamad Medvedev, last year's Next Gen Finals finalist, I believe it was the rising Serbian star. Maybe he was the title of the Next Gen Finals winner. He's going to take on Jurij Lehecka. Really excited for that match. Good to see Medvedev healthy again. Mahatch versus Shelton on clay. Medvedev versus Arnaldi on clay. And then the biggest story that I have not spent enough time talking about. Who is the prospect I am most excited about right now, men's or women's tennis? And I want to use that keyword again, prospect. Not someone who's already established themselves. Swiatek, Sinner, Alcaraz, yeah, they're all under 23. They're no longer prospects. They're just straight-up players. They're actors in this ATP WTA Tour world. João Fonseca is the prospect who you just need to know about. If you haven't spent time watching the young Brazilian ball out already, there are just too many shades of Sinner. Too many on how explosive he is off of both ground stroke wings, on how well he gets outside the ball on the backhand to generate angle and velocity and action on that ball, and he can drive through it line as well. I think he's a better mover at his age, certainly, than I thought Yannick Sinner was. I used to think Sinner had slow hips and like wasn't going to make it, but we know he's going to struggle at the elite ranks because, yeah, he had the weapons, but would he be a fluid enough athlete to utilize those weapons against elite speed and elite competition? I don't have any of those concerns for Fonseca. Like, it's when, not if, Fonseca is going to be a top 50 player. I feel more confident than I did about Dom Stricker, more confident than I did about Shelton. I'm gonna put some equity in this Fonseca position that I'm taking. Like, I'm very certain Zhao's a guy moving forward. My little brother and I, and by the way, happy belated birthday to Nick Gruskin, who turns 22 yesterday, the double deuce, who's also graduating college this weekend, in case all of us weren't feeling old enough already. Graduating college here shortly, not this weekend. Anyways, I want all the Fonseca positioning. Like, top 10, I'll take the take. Top five, I'll take the take. Is he a tier one prospect guaranteed to win a slam in the next decade, meaning by April 26, 2034? I think I'm ready to take that position. I mean, again, recently we've relegated Felix from tier one. He was once upon a time a guy I thought sure thing he was going to get a slam by January 1st, 2030. No longer. His place has kind of been replaced by Holger Rune. Tsitsipas has waffled up between those two lists, in and out and in and out. I'm going to leave him on the list for, after this run, another season and a half, maybe two. Zverev will still stay on that list for another season and a half, maybe two. Fonseca's on the list. Like, he just is. Of guys who don't have a slam, who I think someday might be capable of perhaps capturing one, I'm putting João Fonseca on that list of prospects. I've seen enough that he's now a tier one prospect for me moving forward. And folks, I sincerely do not say that lightly. That said, that's your inaugural look at all things happening this week in Madrid. Of course, I will be back tomorrow, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday with podcasts for you listeners as we right the ship here on the Mini Break podcast feed. Make sure all of you listeners now moving forward have everything you need to stay up to date on everything happening in the tennis world. Of course, the reason we're able to produce these episodes day in, day out, because of the tireless efforts of our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, who, as always, has a of any job to do day in, day out. A shout out to him, a shout out as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products. With that said, for our fantastic super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Crack Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say? That's the break. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone. We'll be right back.